This is an Equity Beats Media podcast.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Equity Mates!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you can.
Welcome back to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast where we explore what's possible in the world of investing. If you've just joined us for the first time, a huge welcome. And today we are joined by Kerry Craig from JP Morgan Asset Management to cover portfolio construction and home country bias. To chat through it, as always, is my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. I'm excited for this episode, partly because we've got the massive muscle of JP Morgan Asset Management joining this little old podcast,
which is
quite exciting. But also, I think we're talking about some really key foundational concepts for anyone's investing portfolio. Portfolio construction is all about what assets are you buying, where are they located in the world, and then if you're choosing funds, how are you choosing the right funds? Some really foundational concepts. And then home country bias is something that Australians suffer from almost more than anywhere else in the world. The Australian stock market is 2% of the global stock market. And depending on what study you read, the average Aussie investment portfolio is anywhere between 50 and 70% ASX stocks. That is just a massive bias towards Australia. And that's leaving a lot of the rest of the world on the table.
Uncovered opportunity, untouched opportunity out there.
Yeah. And I think the beauty of investing in 2024 is it's never been easier to buy overseas stocks. And you don't have to sign up with a broker that lets you buy stuff in America or Europe. There's plenty of assets and funds and opportunities listed on the Australian stock market that give you that exposure.
That's it.
And we're going to be talking about some of that today.
That's it. Not only are we going to be talking about it today, but portfolio construction and investment strategies are also going to be hot topics at our Ask an Advisor live event here in Sydney coming up in a couple of weeks' time. We are going to be sitting down with Glenn Hare from Fox and Hare, one of Australia's leading financial advisors, to give you the opportunity to ask him any money or investing question live on the night as we record a podcast with him, as well as speak to him and the team, meet us, plenty of giveaways. It's going to be a very fun night.
Yeah, so that's on the 10th of April. Doors open at 6 p.m. So yeah. Jump to the link in the show notes or equitymates.com/events to secure your tickets. We can't wait to see you there. But Bryce, I think let's get to this interview with Kerry Craig. He is an executive director and global market strategist at JP Morgan Asset Management. And we want to say a massive thank you to JP Morgan Asset Management for supporting this episode, making this podcast possible. Let's get to it.
Let's go. Kerry, welcome to Equity Mates.
Oh, great. Thank you very much for having me back on the show.
Always a pleasure. So today we're going to be breaking down portfolio construction, home country bias, and then having a look at a couple of JP Morgan Asset Management's active ETFs. So let's start with the theme of home country bias. If you can help new listeners and those who need a reminder to understand what it is and just how bad it is in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an uncommon thing, and it's definitely not a thing that's unique to Australia. It is a bit more prevalent here than other markets. And home country bias is simply saying, you know, invest in what you know and what you see. It's that if you're walking down the street and you see like the same bank being advertised, if you're thinking, well, I pay my electricity bill all the time, so that, you know, utility company is good, and you have a familiarity with these companies, and so that's where you tend to put your money. Again, it's something that happens in most markets around the world. It's a bit more prevalent in Australia because there's obviously some tax benefits for thinking about investing in Australian equities. It does feel like geographically we're very far away from the rest of the world, so you tend to think about what's happening here. But it's really a suboptimal way to think about investing because Australia is not a very big market. We're less than 3% of the global equity market. We're less than 2% of the global economy. So geographically, Australia is a massive country. economy or capital markets wise, we're a tiny country. And I think for most people, when they think about how to invest, they obviously start local, but that foregoes a huge amount of opportunities that you see internationally. So there's 2,800 companies in the MSCI All Country World, which is a global benchmark for global equities. If you invest just in Australia, you're missing out on the other 2,700 companies that are in that index. And it is pretty extreme when you think about, you know, how does it stack up here relative to other countries? And I was having a quick look at something. There's, you know, numerous online platforms that show you how you can, you know, invest in a balanced portfolio, kind of like robo-advice kind of thing. So I was looking at their, one of the platform's portfolios to see how their allocation broke down. And so it's a great way to get started investing. You give them some money, they put some in stocks, they put some in bonds, maybe there's some gold. But their growth portfolio, which had obviously a bias towards equities because they grow, their growth portfolio had an allocation of 42% to Australian equities. Wow. So every $1 you give for this portfolio, 42 cents go into the Australian equity market. And because it's so dominated by just a handful of companies, it effectively means that half of that goes to five companies in the Australian equity market. So you really are thinking about over-allocating to a market where maybe the growth potential is not so great, or over-allocating to just a very small number of companies because of the way that our equity market is constructed.
It's particularly pronounced for Australian investors because Australia is so small, as you were saying, 2% of the global stock market. And some numbers we were looking at had the average Australian equity portfolio somewhere between 60% and 70% in domestic stocks. Whereas in America, it's about the same, 70% of their portfolios are in domestic stocks, but they're 56% of the global stock market.
Mm. Yeah, so it's much more balanced if you think about the global allocation. And if there's the old adage, you follow the smart money or whatever you want to call it. If you look at how institutions and pension funds are allocating and how they have been shifting their allocations over time, they're definitely more moving more international and away from the domestic market. And I think that's an indicator of where, you know, the growth for the next decade comes from in terms of thinking about returns for markets.
When we're talking about portfolio construction and home country bias, it goes beyond just the weightings of portfolios, because you also want to make sure you're exposed to some of the biggest themes, trends, and I guess brands. And if you have a strong home country bias, you probably, or especially if you have a strong Australian home country bias, you're probably missing some of them.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at, or just as an exercise yourself, just start thinking about, you know, what are the top brands that come to mind and make a list. And how many, if any, are going to be Australian on that list, right? You know, I know you guys travelled over to see the Berkshire Hathaway summit, was it last year? He's always talking around, you know, the brands he likes, the quality of companies. They're not Australian ones, are they? Mm. He's talking about big American brands, or he's talking about international brands. He's moving into Japan in a big way. You know, Australia is just very small in the global context. And you have these big international well-known investors who are talking about how they have that very strong bias in their own views. And that's one to thinking about the quality and international view on that. So when it does come back down to thinking about those themes, they are very much ones that are global, that are, you know, underrepresented in the Australian index, whether it's, you know, one that I'm sure you've talked about ad nauseum, AI. I mean, that's a really obvious one, but you can think about other ones. So there is also biotechnology and pharma. Obviously, there's a huge risk around healthcare, around obesity and across many parts of developed markets. I mean, where are all those pharma companies based? Some are in the US. A lot of them are actually in Europe. Goldman Sachs came out with an acronym, Granolas. I don't know if you've seen that. So Magnificent Seven, the US, everyone's, you know, familiar with that, although it's looking more Famous Five these days. There's a couple that are getting a bit weaker. Granolas is a number of companies in Europe which over the last 2 years have actually outperformed the Magnificent Seven. It's the same concept around concentration risk. They're contributing quite a lot to the European equity performance, but they're healthcare companies. They're luxury good brands. And there's a couple of tech companies in there too, but they're a much broader basket, and that really plays into that theme around how these companies are benefiting from that movement in healthcare, you know, the obesity drugs, but also that you have that growing middle class across many parts of the emerging world, particularly through Asia, who have an increasing demand for luxury goods and those luxury brands, and that's fueling some of that. But there's also other things that feed into that. It's not just consumer. You can think about, as people become more wealthy, what do they need? a lot more financial services. A lot of Asia is underbanked to a certain extent. These are all broadening themes that are going to be secular, and they're going to play out over a number of years and are not always what's representative in Australia when we think about a market that's dominated by, you know, commodities and local banks that have a very much, you know, bias towards what's happening within the housing market in Australia.
Now, as someone who hadn't heard of the granolas term before,
furiously googling it, I could hear you.
Yeah, if you were watching the video, you would have seen Bryce and I both googling it then. But, you know, rest assured, we both invest globally in our sort of core portfolio. We've sort of removed that home country bias, so we would have been buying these stocks through our global ETFs.
Yes. Well, for those listening, granolas, you've got GlaxoSmithKline, that's the G, which is a pharma company.
I don't think it's a pure one. I think there's a few other companies that, but yeah, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, Roche, ASML, Nestle, Novartis, Novo Nordisk, L'Oreal, LVMH, AstraZeneca, SAP, and Sanofi. That makes up granolas.
Granolas. They're going to be cereal outperformers. You can cut that out. I just couldn't resist.
No.
That's not, I've got to qualify that. I don't know. They have been outperforming, but I don't know if they're going to continue to outperform. So before compliance yells at me, I'll just put that in.
That's very good. So, Kerry, when you're looking at those thematics, but also thinking about getting out of home country bias in some of the major other markets around the world, where does JP Morgan Asset Management see some of the biggest growth opportunities in the next decade?
Well, yeah, we can go back in terms of thinking about our own processes and how we build portfolios on a strategic asset allocation view. We produce these long-term forecasts under our long-term capital market assumptions. You know, that's a 10 to 15-year view of the world. We very much, on the equity side, start with a top-down view of the macro economy. And one of the biggest changes in that this year is that we saw bigger returns coming from like Europe and Japan rather than the US. So US exceptionalism and performance has been something that's been very prevalent over the last 10 years and feels like it's still with us if we look at how the equity market's going or the strength of the US dollar. But it's over that decade where we see that shift, because you have a relative valuation argument that European and Japanese stocks are relatively more attractively valued than US ones at the moment, that you have increasing growth prospects, Japan being a perfect example of that, where you see actually a movement away from what appears to be an inflationary or deflationary spiral to one that's more inflationary, which is positive, and the growth coming through, as well as structural changes in how the equity market works to improve shareholder value. And in Europe, you've got a lot bigger shift around government support for the environment, which is fueling a lot of fiscal spending, which should lead to more growth and more inflation as well, which is something that's been lacking. So you have a lot more nominal growth in those places, which feeds into thinking about better returns from equity markets, because nominal growth is how they grow, and then a little bit less so from the US. So it becomes a little bit more balanced in terms of thinking about around the world and not just the US in this context. You know, I'm going to qualify that and say Australia does stack up still pretty well in those numbers. But again, it's because Australia has really good demographic profile relative to the rest of the world. So it's more a case of thinking we have still really good, relatively good developed market growth compared to, say, the US, because we have a better benefit from that. But the structure of our equity market, it's so reliant on commodities and mining. We do know that if you are going to think about slowing parts of the world, which are so heavily demanding that, then that is going to have a knock-on effect to Australia. So I think it's a bit of a balancing act there, and we're definitely underrepresented in some of those big themes that we've just discussed in terms of how the structure of the market. We don't have many big margin companies here compared to, say, the US, which is why they're so strong at the moment.
So let's put this all together and relate it back to an individual investor's portfolio. What are some of the general rules of thumb when it comes to portfolio construction?
I think the first one is, what are you trying to achieve? Like, what is your goal for investing? Well, that might come back down to your age, your risk profile, what you're doing. So if you're younger, you're thinking about, I want to grow my portfolio, I want to grow that wealth. So maybe it's more equity biased than fixed income biased. If you're thinking more around the income side of things, if you're a little bit older, you're trying to generate income. So maybe you're more fixed interest or equity income biased rather than anything else. So the starting point is always, what are you trying to achieve? And then you can think about simply, well, a balanced portfolio is something that's like 60% equities, 40% bonds. So you're diversifying across that. You've got those shock absorbers in your portfolio. And then you shift that based on thinking around, if I want more growth, more equities, if I want more defense, more fixed income. But those are very much the two bedrocks. And I think how you fill up those buckets is really something that gives you a lot of choice these days. So it used to be that you had to go out, maybe pick the companies that you liked, you know, and you built up, but you ended up with a lot of concentration because you made maybe two or three or maybe a handful of companies. You know, now you can go out and, you know, buy an index fund, which gives you exposure to everything at a relatively cheap price, right? So that becomes like a core foundation of building that portfolio. And it then allows you to build onto it in terms of thinking about, you know, more opportunistic or more cyclical parts that you might take a play on, rather than just thinking about, I need a good foundation of equity exposure. I can get that through buying an ETF that has exposure to the global equity market, and then I can add on to that. So it's very much thinking about building that core, which is very much lacking a lot of people because they've just started by buying the old company here and there, and then how you add to that to increase or decrease those exposures to those areas that you like. And I think the other point that comes up a lot, especially around this concentration risk idea, is that there's all this passive money now flowing into markets, right? There's all these ETFs that simply track the index. And I think that's going to be something that does come up to be a little bit of a risk when it comes to thinking about if you see a big movement in a couple of these big names, that's going to have a very large impact on the market. So you need to be a bit more active around how you approach it. Having exposure to equities is great because it gets you into the investing. But if you want to take that next step and think about how you really want to drive that exposure, you still need to be active in terms of making sure you're picking up the companies that are going to do well and having less of the companies that probably aren't going to do well in any given environment.
So when it comes to asset weighting and asset allocation within the portfolio, you know, we hear time and time again that it's one of the biggest drivers of return. For those sort of sitting at home thinking, well, you know, I've got just a bunch of random companies and then a core portfolio as well, are there any like industry standards in terms of percentages that we could look to in terms of how we allocate? You know, is it 60% to international? Is it 20% to home? How do we sort of think through that?
Again, it does come down to a bit of specifics around the individual, but you can start with that 60-40 breakdown of thinking about equities versus fixed income. And then even within that fixed income bucket, which is meant to be more defensive, maybe you can think about how much sort of cash you want. Again, it comes back down to your preferences in terms of, do I need to have a little bit of money set aside to cover any kind of risk that may come up? So some people say, I need 3 months worth of money to cover my rent or something like that. And then within the equity bucket, if you're thinking around how much home versus international exposure do you need, I mean, it doesn't need to be, I should only have 2% weighting towards Australia because that's the view of the international equity benchmark, but it should be much lower than say the 42% or 48% earlier. And again, it is not the case that there's not good quality companies in Australia. It's just if you have that focus on thinking around those global themes, you're going to get it offshore. One option would be to look at some standard, if you just go online and look at how different financial advisors are structuring their portfolios. They'll have growth, they'll have defensive, they'll have more moderate portfolios, which will give you a range of views. And we just start with a 60-40 and say, if you want more growth, it's more 70-30. If you want less, it's more 50-50 on that split. If you want more income, it's going to be more 60% bonds, 40% equity, but you're not going to get that growth. You're going to get that income that you need rather than thinking about growing your portfolio. And I feel for probably a lot of your listeners, it's more the growth side that they're thinking about. So it'd be a higher weight towards equities. Another thing you could do, I mentioned following the smart money. If you look at how there's many studies released on the weightings that our pension funds have in terms of their allocation, they have about a 20% weight towards Australian equities, and they've been growing that international weight in terms of that. So that could also be a guide, but I think it does come down to individual preference, risk tolerance, and importantly, investment horizon. So if you have a short investment horizon, you're going to have to be much more wary about things like volatility and specifically valuations. If you have a longer investment horizon, which I think again would probably suit your listeners because they're thinking about growing and it takes time to grow your portfolio, then things like volatility are much more things that are going to be wiped out. So it does allow you to go into more volatile parts of the equity market, such as the emerging world, where that short-term noise gets played out over time.
So if we just recap where we are in the portfolio construction journey, we start general, we think about what our goals are, what our time horizon is, and what our risk tolerance is. Then we think about asset weighting, so allocation to stocks, allocations to bonds. These days you can also think about alternatives like infrastructure and stuff like that. Then below that, it's then in each of those asset classes, geographical spread, domestic, international. But then the final step is really manager selection. How do we choose for each of those weightings, you know, domestic equities, international bonds, whatever it is, how do we find the right person or team to manage that money? Now, obviously, you're going to say JP Morgan Asset Management, but I guess if we think about what are the general rules of thumb to choose those people, what are we looking for? What should we watch out for? What are some rules there that we can apply?
Yeah, I think it's always interesting. And, you know, I deal with a lot of clients, speak to a lot of people. They tend to focus on performance a lot. They're like, well, you know, I'm not giving my money to a person that doesn't perform. Makes sense. You know, you don't want to part with your hard-earned cash in the wrong way. So I think the performance, though, is key in terms of don't look at one-year performance numbers. Look at how any fund has performed over its longest time frame. So if there's a 3, a 5, a 10-year number, look for something that has a proven track record, because that's going to get you the best indication of how it performs through different parts of the economic cycle. Over a one-year time period, you're getting very much what could be just an aberration in terms of where it was in the cycle. So I think looking at something that has a proven track record and that consistency in portfolio performance is really what you're after. And the second thing, if you're thinking about, you know, going through the details of how a particular product may work, would be looking for a clear and consistent process. So the worst thing about investing is obviously emotions. They take over and often lead to weak decisions. But if you have something that's a very consistent process that's repeatable, and that's illustrated in a lot of the products that, you know, you may be looking at, that's something that also would give you reassurance that this fund manager will be doing something that's along the lines of a process that's proven, rather than just sort of knee-jerk reactions to the market swinging around. And then also the depth of research behind that is going to be quite crucial in terms of how much support do they have as a portfolio management team to actually deliver on those results in the long run.
Well, that's a good segue, because JP Morgan Asset Management have two new funds available to help investors gain exposure to global and emerging markets. The two funds are JP Morgan Global Research Enhanced Index Equity Active ETF and JP Morgan Emerging Markets Research Enhanced Index Equity ETF.
It's a mouthful.
Say that 5 times quickly, yeah.
In both of those, we want to start with the definition, which is research enhanced index equity. So, Kerry, what does that actually mean?
So we think about a traditional ETF, a passive ETF, where you're just buying a little bit of every company in an index. So you're just getting beta, you're just getting the market. So as the market moves, your performance moves. Research enhanced means that behind that, we have portfolio managers who are supported by, in our case, over 90 equity analysts around the world who cover the, you know, 2,800 stocks that are out there. And within the equity index, they're going through and saying, I really like that company, I don't like that company so much. So they're underweighting and overweighting specific companies within the index based on their stock research that they have done. In a similar way that if you were looking at a stockbroker report, they're going to tell you a buy, sell, or hold rating. So we have all our analysts doing that for every company within the index. So you're getting exposure to the whole index, but it's research enhanced because you're getting the analyst and portfolio managers' added value of picking the stocks that they think are going to do a little bit better and underweighting the stocks that they think aren't going to be suited. Now, that doesn't mean that you have a concentration risk in terms of thinking about the whole of the world and they're only picking the ones that do really well. So, you know, some fund managers just have like 50 companies that they own. You're still getting exposure to the globe. You're just getting these small underweights and overweights based on that. And that's at the industry level. So, for example, they might say, well, let's look at all the banks in the world. Which banks do we like? Well, we really like this bank in the US. We don't like this bank in Europe so much. So they'll take a spread. They'll like overweight that US bank at the expense of a European bank, for example. But on balance, your exposure is the same. They're just picking the bank that they think is going to do better relative to the other one. And so you're getting alpha. So you're getting the market, plus you're getting that added little bit of having that enhancement that comes with having that depth of research and portfolio management overlay that makes that an active ETF rather than just a passive one that tracks the market.
Now, these are relatively new ETFs, but do they have a track record as like funds before they listed?
Yeah, it's a really important point. An ETF, you know, a trade traded fund, is just a vehicle for accessing it. It's not a new product. It's not something different. It's just a way of wrapping a product up that makes it more accessible because it's traded on an exchange rather than having to go direct into a mutual fund. So these funds and a lot of the JP Morgan funds that we're bringing to market here are ones that have existed in a mutual fund format for a very long time. It's just that we've wrapped them up to call them ETFs and make them accessible to a broader audience by listing them on platforms that people can access. So yeah, these things have been around, I think, in this case for a couple of decades in terms of the Global Research Enhanced Fund. So they have a very long run proven track record that you can look up on the website.
So, I mean, the big question is, have they outperformed the overall index?
Consistency. I came back to that point about proven portfolio management teams and thinking about a consistent, repeatable process. These things have that. And so they have, over time, generated that little bit of alpha that has added to that relative performance over just the benchmark fund over that long horizon.
So, Kerry, one of the, struggles that we often think about when it comes to active ETFs is that you often get the cost of the active manager built into the into the ETF. So what is the cost of this versus, well, yeah, what is the cost of these ETFs?
They're designed to be something that is accessible, right? That, you know, everyone can go and get that global exposure. So they're a very cost-effective way of building that core exposure to global equity markets. So they're 30 basis points in terms of thinking about that global developed market exposure that comes in the global REI product. When it comes to the global emerging market one, it's a little bit more. It's 35 basis points, but still relatively very attractive when we think about, you know, some of the more difficulties that come with investing in the emerging world where, you know, there's less transparency, there's less data, you need to do better research to actually understand what companies are doing. But in terms of thinking about that relative to, you know, just what you spend to go and buy a stock or just what you go to buy a mutual fund outright, these are very attractively priced ways to get into the market and get that balancing exposure in your portfolio, which may be, you know, more erring towards the side of the Australian market. And just on that, because we're talking about the products, these ones are brought to market in Australia and are specifically designed for Australians. So you're not doubling up. They don't have the Australian companies in them. So if you already have those Australian companies, you're not doubling down and getting that extra exposure.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So just to put that into perspective, 30 basis points, 0.3% for every $1,000 that you're putting into the market, you're paying, putting into the fund, you're just paying $3 a year. So a very cost-effective way to get global active exposure from JP Morgan.
This whole conversation's been about portfolio construction. And so when you think about these two funds, how do they fit into an individual investor's portfolio?
They very much form that core basis. So if you think about that 60-40 balanced portfolio, just for argument's sake, if you're really wanting to build up that portfolio, you start with a core allocation. It's a relatively cost-effective way to start that. And then you add on to it through other things. So for example, if you did want to have a growthier one, you can complement that by having more emerging market exposure because that's going to have more growth, a little bit more volatility that comes with it. So you want to think about that longer time horizon. And then it sits there and it complements the things you already have in terms of the Australian exposure because you're not doubling down on that. And I think if you want to think about how to either juice up your portfolio, you can add to it through other specific theme stocks that might come through or themed ETFs and really have that as something you can move around while that core allocation to your global benchmark just sits there, it ticks over and gives you that broad growth exposure and being able to complement it with other funds that come through.
So when are you guys bringing on the Research Enhanced 3x leveraged ETFs?
I don't know. I'm sure they're probably thinking about it.
Now, Kerry, that does bring us to the end of our time today. If people want to find out more about JP Morgan Asset Management's new active ETFs, they can search JP Morgan Global Research Enhanced Index Equity Active ETF, JREG, J-R-E-G is the ticker. And you can also search for JP Morgan Emerging Markets Research Enhanced Index Equity Active ETF. The ticker there is J-R-E-M. So we've got JREG, which is global, and then JREM, which is focused on emerging markets. But Kerry, a massive thank you for joining us today.
No worries. Thank you again for having us on.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services License 540697.